Redwyn has a nicely dowered daughter. Welcome to the White Oak Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to keep the same in second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to GRRM for his amazing novels, FFG for this fantastic game, Card Game DB for getting us a start, and you, our loyal listeners, for sticking through thick and thin. Check us out on our website, Facebook, or Twitter, or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com and rate us on iTunes. This CC licensed music is Town Fiction by Spinners. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the White Book Podcast. Originally, I was not planning on us having an episode out and up here on Thanksgiving weekend, but I'm off of work early, and it strikes me that the House of Thorns previews are stretching on longer and longer past when they were out, thanks to Holiday, World, Stalic, all sorts of fun. So, despite the fact that it is just myself at kind of this odd time, I am going to go ahead and jump in. I'm going to plow us right through some of my opinions on the latter half of the Tyrell cards in this box. And then next week, you'll have myself and Kyle covering the non-Tyrell cards in the box. So, with that said, let's go ahead and jump in. First up, we have Desmera Redwyn. She's going to be a unique Tyrell, not loyal, 2-cost, 2-strength, intrigue and power icon, House Redwyn and Lady traits, and reaction, after a character is removed from a challenge, pay 1 gold to give that character +2 strength or -1 strength until the end of the phase. You know, I like her. I think, actually, what I like her for the most is probably just kind of the cost efficiency here, especially with a beneficial trait. She's cheap, good icons here, and there's a lot that Tyrell wants with ladies floating around. The fact that she's not loyal really opens up some of that tech further in banners. The reaction, I think, is okay. There are some interesting things you can do with this. Tyrell, of course, has a lot of stand and remove stuff from challenge, which does leave you in kind of an awkward spot where those characters can then be used in another challenge afterward. And most of the characters played these days have at least 2 icons. So I think the more common option here is probably going to be the -1 strength to try and give those characters a penalty toward being in further challenges, so that hopefully you can still get around them as you need. Though I definitely think there's probably some possibilities to use that +2 strength on a character of your own so that you can swing them harder at another challenge. Maybe you're needing to boost Brienne's strength up to hit the 15. There's a handful of things here, but I think that's going to be the lesser chosen option most of the time when the character is removed. But still, she's a very efficient little chud. There's a ton of Tyrell decks where I think I would play at least one copy of her. So I think Desmera probably gets a very solid B. Next up, we have Maester Balibar. He's going to be another unique at 2-cost and not loyal. He has 1 strength and an intrigue icon. He is a Maester of Gorse. And action, during a challenge in which you control a participating character, kneel Maester Balibar to choose a character with the lowest strength among participating characters. stand that character and remove it from the challenge. You know, I actually really like this guy. Effectively, in a lot of ways, he just removes chump blockers from your path, which is going to be handy to pick up some additional unopposed here and there. And I also really think that some of the Tyrell Reigns of Castamere decks are going to love him to kind of tweak challenge math to make sure they can win that intrigue by five. Honestly, any of the win by five effects are probably going to be looking at this, but I think that's probably the most common. I think he's going to be very, very efficient at what he does, and one deck slot for him is a very, very minimal cost. He doesn't really need a pile of Maester Tactical with him. He does his thing pretty effectively on his own, which I very much like. Maester Balabar, I actually think, is going to be a little more versatile than Desmera. So Balabar, I think, probably gets a B+ from me. Next up, High Garden Courtier. Now we move on to a non-unique, still two cost and non-loyal. She has a power icon and one strength. She has a companion trait and reaction. After another character's strength is increased by a card effect, kneel High Garden Courtier to stand that character. Limit once per phase. This one is pretty huge. Stand, as we've discovered time and time again, is a very strong ability. I mean, look at Paxter himself and how popular, Paxter, Randall Tarley, and how popular and strong he has been since the core set. The High Garden Courtier here effectively gives that ability to anybody you need it on, which is going to be very strong. Of course, something like Lord of the Crossing, they're going to get that on that last challenge. Marjorie Tyrell, all sorts of Tyrell effects. It's just worth noting, this does not count when a character's strength returns to normal. For instance, say you have a 5 strength character that gets hit with Dracarys by a Targaryen player so that they can win a challenge. When that Dracarys wears off and the character returns to their 5 strength, that does not count for the courtier. But still, there's so many other ways that you can be boosting strength out of Tyrell, getting multiple challenges out of those renowned characters and everything, that the courtier, I think, is really good for a non-unique. She needs a little bit of tech to back her up, so I'm hesitant to put her too high, but I think she's definitely at least a B+ character for them. Just does a lot that they want. Next up, we have the Jousting Knight, another 2-cost, non-unique, non-loyal. Noticing a trend here? I sure am. Feels like the cost curve is trending downward a little bit. So the Jousting Knight is going to have military and power icons. He has 3 strength and a knight trait. And Jousting Knight does not contribute a strength to a challenge unless it's attacking or defending alone. This, I think, is deceptively quite good. I think I really liked the kind of Baratheon equivalent character, the guard that kneels when you lose an intrigue, that I think a lot of other people were down on. Jousting Knight, I think his downside is a little easier to mitigate in Tyrell. He can still chump in and out at your choice versus your opponent having the choice to try and win an intrigue against you. Any of the Tyrell strength boosts are really going to help him still be competitive even when he's in that challenge alone, particularly with the Jousting Pavilion that's later in this pack. I think he can actually have quite a bit of strength for a very low cost, which I think is pretty solid. Plays a little bit against some of those renowned characters. You want to be throwing several of them into challenges off in many decks and racking up power quickly. So Jousting Knight's kind of sideways to that, but I think there are decks that are really going to put him to some good use as just a very efficient chud. So I think the Jousting Knight is probably C+ to maybe a B- range. Next up, we have the High Tower. Now we move into the locations. This is a 4-cost unique and, thank goodness, loyal location. House High Tower and Old Town traits. And the reaction, after a Tyrell character enters play under your control, gain 1 gold and draw 1 card. Limit once per phase. Per phase! And entering play can be something as straightforward as just marshaling the character. It could be ambushing them. It could be that character entering play after you've blinked them out of existence with Mace Tyrell's ability. There's several ways to trigger it. It could be returning to play via Flea Bottom. There's so many good ways to trigger this. And Tyrell, I think, has a broad enough pool of those that I think it's going to be very easy to make sure you're triggering this twice per turn in marshaling and challenges phases, and possibly a third time as well, depending on exactly what you have going on and whether you have Mace available. And, you know, at that point, getting a kind of flexible 2 gold and drawing 2 cards, I think, looks really, really quite strong here. It's very expensive at that cost. It's going to take a bit more time to build that tempo back than some of the other 4-costers we've seen. But I think if you can stick this for a couple turns, it should cover itself and then be huge upside from there on out. So this is going to be part of a combo deck, obviously, with Mace. Or at least some variety of synergy, if not the traditional combo that ends in a game win like Hyper Viper does. But it's definitely going to be an engine, and it's really going to pile on the card advantage there that I think may make Tyrell hard to keep up with. Next up, we have Redwyn Straits. This may be one of my very, very favorite cards in the entire box. It's so simple and straightforward. Let me tell you, it is unique and loyal. 2 cost. House Redwyn trait, the limited keyword, and gives +2 gold. That's it. It's just straightforward. It's probably the most efficient income card we've got, right? I mean, okay, so Rose Road's giving you +1 for 0. But the Redwyn Straits gives you such a nice big chunk and plays around nicely some of the other effects. Political Disaster has been floating in people's opinions a lot as maybe really coming back into vogue now, or maybe into vogue for the first time. And the more you can pile on an income into a smaller location base, I think the better in a lot of ways, as long as you're not getting those stolen somehow. And between this and the Arbor, you're getting a lot of punch for very few cards. And these kind of big income boosts really, I think, sway second edition so much. It's still so much of an economy game, even with the expanded resources that we have available to us from the past year or so worth of cards. And so Redwyn Straits is great. There was a first edition Lannister card that was this exact same thing, but non-unique, that I always loved. I was really high up on and a lot of people were down on. But it still felt like it really paid off for me. A couple copies of it in my deck a couple times when I did manage to make it top 16 at Worlds. And I think Redwyn Straits, despite being unique now, the different curve of second edition still puts it at least at, but probably a higher power level than it had in first edition at Lannister. So I can't hardly say enough good things about this. The problem is they all are just kind of the same good thing. Money is good. Next up, we have a non-unique location. This is the Jousting Pavilion. It is also not loyal. It's 0 cost, and it has the Reach trait. So it says each knight character you control gets +1 strength while attacking or defending alone. This adds up really quickly, especially when you have access to the Green Apple Knight that we were kind of alluding to and talking about before when Jim was on the show. Or more recently here when I was talking about the Jousting Knight, it just gives you a lot of punch at a very low sort of investment, obviously, at zero gold. But here's the thing, it's zero gold and non-limited. That's something you don't come across a lot of in second edition, which is going to be great for setup. The rest of the Knights deck already can have a pretty low curve if it wants to. So I think that you're going to need to kind of watch these decks out of Tyrell, because I think they're going to have a lot better of a setup than we're kind of accustomed to in second edition now. And while they're also going to need to watch themselves to make sure they don't overextend and run headlong into some kind of reset, I think they're going to be able to build a really stable base at a pretty fast clip. And this strength boost here means, you know, they have to really commit less into any particular challenge, less resources, and keep those other characters available for other challenges, be that on attack or defense, whatever they need, which I think is kind of an option that helps out very nicely for them. So the Jousting Pavilion is probably going to get about a C+ from you. Still got to have those knights. It goes in a very certain kind of deck, but I really, really like it for those decks. Okay, now we get to move into attachments with the Queen of the Seven Kingdoms. This is a unique attachment. It's not loyal. Cost 2. Has the title trait and says Lady Character Only. Attached character gains the queen trait. Action, stand attached character and remove it from a challenge to choose a participating character. Stand that character and remove it from the challenge. Limit once per phase. So this one, I think, is an interesting one. I kind of like that it is any character that you can remove that from. So you could remove the character this is on, kind of turning them into a pseudo Asha. I like the thought of that on, Tinder March, so you can try to force her way into whatever challenge is actually going to get you some renown if your opponent blocks you on the challenge you throw her in first. I think that's very interesting. That's even aside from just the straight-up ability to remove problematic characters off of your opponent's side of the challenge. You know, they've got a Mag the Mighty coming your way or a Corrin Halfhand. Okay, so it's got to be a challenge you can get this character into. So you're going to need those icons to match up a little better than those military icons I was mentioning just now. But hey, this can go on a lady. It could go on Brienne of Tarth if you would like. So there's your military icon. And I think in general, it's going to be pretty interesting. It is, however, an attachment at a little bit of a more expensive slot. We don't desperately need the queen trait for anything in particular. So despite the fact that I like some of the things that Queen of the Seven Kingdoms does, I don't actually think that we're going to really see this having much play. So it's probably actually just about a C- sort of card. So next up then, that's going to send us to another attachment, the Tourney Lance. This one is non-unique, one cost, non-loyal, it's a weapon, goes on a knight character only, and attached character gets +1 strength. While attached character is attacking alone, the defending player cannot declare more than one character as a defender. Well, here's another great tool for those Green Apple Knights and Jousting Knights. Heck, even your Garland Tyrells. I think this is very interesting for that sort of knight deck that wants to just keep sending one kind of champion over at a time. And between this and those Jousting Pavilions, I think those are going to be very beefy single characters, which then leaves the rest of their board sitting pretty to defend against you. So I think it's interesting. It very much has to go in that particular type of deck But it looks like a surprisingly strong option there, and another card at that very low non-unique cost curve that's going to help with their setups. So that's another thing to watch. In general, I think the Tourney Lance probably only gets about a flat C from me, but it does make me excited about the general potential of that Knight stack. Next up, we have Melee at Bitterbridge. This is an X-cost event. It's not loyal and has the action choose X participating characters. Each character with the highest strength among those characters gains renown until the end of the challenge. Each other chosen character does not contribute its strength to the challenge. This is one that I believe we've talked about on the show some before, and it's another one, I think, with a lot of strong potential. Now, the X, of course, always worries me with Hand's Judgment, because as many of our listeners know, that X is treated as zero for determining how much to pay for Hand's Judgment, so it can always cancel this for free, even if you've paid, say, four for the event. So be wary of that. Hand's Judgment is extremely popular at the moment, and so that could be a bit of an issue. That said, I even at just paying one to give renown to one character on your side that has the highest strength, because, of course, I hope you're only playing this in that situation, and then making nothing else happen could be okay. There are games where I think I might be willing to do that. On the other hand, if I'm willing to at least invest two into this so that I'm giving a character on my side renown and making an opposing character not count their strength during the challenge, I think it seems like a very, very potent challenge trick. Maybe not quite to the level of, say, Vengeance for Elia at two cost, but in the realm of really mucking with plans both on potential power counts and who's actually going to win that challenge. So I like it. I like it a lot. And I also really enjoy here that none of the chosen characters here, the way this is worded, have to be yours. Nothing going on here has to be a character that you have, a dog in the fight, so to speak, which means that this could have some really interesting implications in Melee, some deal-making or some attempts to stop someone that is in the lead, though granted, if you're blowing out somebody's defenders, you're also giving renown to someone else out of that deal, so that may not always be the best trade, but it is definitely something to look at and think about. So I really like this. I'm not exactly sure what deck it winds up going in at the moment, but it has potential, which leads me to putting Melee at Bitterbridge probably in the B- realm. Next up, we have Maids in a Pool. This is a song event, and you guys know I was trying to make that happen. So this is a two-cost loyal event. It's a song and action. Draw one card for each lady character you control. You know, Tyrell can field a lot of ladies now. They got some other nice options here in this box that I think is going to up what they have on the field at any point in time even more. I think six Maids in the Pool is very, very reasonably letting you draw two cards, and drawing three cards is probably the sweet spot where it becomes worthwhile. So I think that is definitely something that you can do and something that I would be willing to take a look at doing. So does that make it worthwhile to me? I mean, I think there's a very good chance that it does. This is a song event that is not going to need you to really chain them together. You definitely have to be playing a certain angle of Tyrell, but it's one that has been pushed really hard now, and it's going to let you just fill your hand back up in a big chunk. How many of those type of cards does Tyrell need along with Pleasure Barge? I don't know, but this gives you some flexibility for the goal you're shooting for. So I think six Maids in a Pool is, you know, oddly enough, I think probably only about a B card in other houses. If this had a very similar effect for other houses, kind of pet trait, I think this would probably be an A card, but Tyrell has so many card advantage options that I think that's kind of less of a standout in the huge field that they have. So our last event then is going to be Hidden Thorns. Now, this is a one-cost non-loyal event, and it has the reaction after you win an intrigue challenge by 5 or more strength. The losing opponent chooses and discards 2 cards from his or her hand. Then, if you control the Queen of Thorns, return Hidden Thorns to your hand instead of placing it in your discard pile. Max 1 per challenge. This actually, I think, has some nice potential as well. I wish it comboed just a little bit more with the new Queen of Thorns. Obviously, having her in play is going to be very nice in order to trigger Hidden Thorns and get it back, but it's not going to work as far as getting Hidden Thorns out of the discard pile after you've chucked it to her ability to search, which is a little bit of a bummer there. But this definitely means you could just wreck opponents' hands and kind of trash them, which is nice to see another house kind of having an angle on that type of thing, aside from just Lannister. But this is very similar to the Lannister plot that lets you pay 2 gold, the Wardens. So I think it has seen very nice play. Hidden Thorns is a little cheaper, though you have to draw it. And you have to win by 5, of course, but that's certainly something it looks like Tyrell can do with all these strength boosts and ways to kick opposing characters out of challenges. So Hidden Thorns looks good. It's gonna add up. It's not quite a Tears of Lys sort of kill spell, but I like it. So I probably give Hidden Thorns probably a B as well. And last up, we have the Wardens of the South plot. This is a Tyrell loyal plot. It has 4 gold, 4 initiative, 1 claim, 6 reserve, and the summer trait. It has the reaction after a Tyrell character you control is declared as an attacker or defender. That character gets +2 strength until the end of the challenge, and it's limited to 1 per plot deck. I actually I like this plot a lot. I know there's been a good little bit of contention over this plot that people feel it's maybe too efficient. I definitely think it is a strong plot. It does certainly pair well with a lot of Tyrell tech, but I don't know that it's necessarily over the top. It just kind of slots into some of their themes, but there's a lot of decks that I think can't quite find the room for this if they're looking at some other options here. And this is a plot that obviously gets you your biggest boost the wider board you have. But I do like that it's pretty applicable as well to these sort of knight decks that want to sally forth with a single knight at a time. One thing I would really caution people with this plot is to remember that is a reaction, and that is a per character reaction. So what I'm getting at is you're going to have to remember to trigger this every single time. Don't just assume you have that +2. Don't assume your opponent is going to assume you did. You really don't want to be at a higher level event and be counting on this to win you a challenge and then realize that you never formally declared that you were triggering this, because I think there's going to be opponents that are going to hold you to that, and that could really mess up some plans. Now, that said, I mean, it's fantastic to offset the initial -1 on Lord of the Crossing challenges, or to trigger Randall Tarly, or to let you stand people with the portable Tarly, the courtier. It could be a piece of getting Brienne up to 15, though I personally still don't really advise that game plan at the moment. I think it's a lot of options, but it really, for the most part, provides you with some beef for a turn. And it's an interesting way to kind of take the Strength Matters theme for Tyrell. I like that we have seen a little bit more of that rear its head in this box. It still feels maybe not quite as organized or where I want it, but I do like seeing these type of pieces crop up. I think it's a very reasonable plot. I like seeing some more plots here kind of in the mid-range of initiative, though I still wish we would see a couple more at the upper end to kind of diversify that sort of thing in plot decks, not just for melee, but also for Joust. I think a variety of initiative helps make that the kind of the plot phase guessing game much more interesting and entertaining. But it has a very reasonable reserve, the standard claim. Gold there, I think, is fine, particularly with Tyrell having all of their income options in Redwood Straits and the Arbor and such. I think a lot of times I probably want to make sure I have one of those on the board before I head into Wardens, for even in the new economy realm here, it feels just a little light. So I think I want those options available to me before I roll into this. Still, I think it's a very, very solid plot. Probably doesn't quite really make me excited about Tyrell Summer decks, but it stands on its own with probably... probably a B+, I'm going to go with here. Very, very efficient at what it does, just maybe not quite as exciting from a bells and whistles standpoint, which is where I think it is going to get cut out of some plot decks that desperately wind up needing a reset or draw or some other specialty effect, attachment control, location control, or something. So there you have it, guys. That is the end of the Tyrell portion of the box. Next up, we get to head over to the rest of the non-Tyrell cards next week with Kyle. So we'll see you then. Props and Slops. I'm going to keep this one pretty short since it's just me this time around. I am going to throw some props out to the Thanksgiving holiday. Very, very thankful for family this year and friends as well. So many of you listeners, co-hosts, metamates, and so on have been just phenomenal for this past year. So I just want to throw a huge prop out to all of you guys. And aside from that, maybe throw a quick prop out to Seven to Eternity comic. I just got around to reading the second volume of the trade. Pretty fun kind of fantasy world. almost steals, you know, some of that Lord of the Rings, get the fellowship together and travel from point A to point B in order to save the world from this, you know, world-spanning, conquering evil force. And then it gets much more complicated from there. Things are maybe not quite as cut and dry as you think. So I don't want to necessarily spoil anything, but I think it's a very interesting, unique world. A lot of flavor there. It's very cool. So go check out 7 to Eternity if you have not had the chance to do that yet. So other than that, I think we're going to call it a wraps. That's going to close this week's chapter of the White Book. Stay out of the danger zone, folks.